Good morning, Mr. Dugin. Welcome to Eurosiberia, the new podcast for Arctos. I hope you're well today, and I would quickly like to introduce you. Like, you're the foremost geopolitical thinker in Russia and also possibly in the world. And you're the founder of the Eurasianist movement, and you are well known for writing deep analyses of various topics, politically and geopolitically. And also, you're the author of several books. A lot of them have been bestsellers and read by people all over the world in different languages. So, Mr. Dugin, could you quickly tell us, please, about the situation regarding Eurasianism in Russia today?
So I think that now we are living in the moment when the Eurasianism that I elaborated during decades finally is accepted as guiding principle of our inner and foreign policy. So that is a very important moment. For example, if we consider the official new version of doctrine of international relations accepted by Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russian Federation, you see that the main point there is multipolarity. And multipolarity and elaboration of the theory of multipolarity and the doctrine of multipolarity was from the very beginning the main feature of Eurasianism, because Eurasianism insists there in the world there are different civilizations and not only one civilization. So the Western civilization is one among the other and not the unique, not universal. So the main idea of the first day Eurasianists of the 20s, as well as our Eurasian movement that started in the end of the 80s, always stressed that we need to criticize, to put out the idea that the Western civilization is unique, is universal. And Eurasia was considered as another civilization, neither Western nor Eastern, but particular civilization that has its right to defend itself, to build independent and sovereign civilization state in some way. And once more, civilizational state concept, that was one of the leading aspects of Eurasianist theory and philosophy, was advocated by Mr. Putin recently, who has declared that Russia is civilizational state. And third term, very dear to Eurasianism, and that was from the very beginning of this movement, the essential part of our philosophical core is the concept of Russki Mir, of Russian world. You can ask me how the world can be Russian. So, but if you, for example, consider the formula, the expressions, typical expressions of the Western science, for example, we can remember Edmund Husserl's term, Europäische Menschheit, European mankind. That's normal. That's nothing special. Europäische Menschheit, European humanity. So that is the main logic, the basic logic of the Western world vision. There is the West as the avant-garde of the global civilization, and all the humanity is the kind in a sort embedded in the Western civilization. And Eurasianists, we always challenge that. So we have for sure Russian, Russian world, Chinese world, Islamic world, Islamic humanity, African humanity, Latin American humanity, and that now is your principle that we defended originally for decades. Now it is accepted as a leading point of main principle of our for foreign policy. In the inner politics, we as well, we see now that 1 year ago, Putin has signed very important that is called the 809, dedicated to the state politics in defense of traditional values. So that is a kind of radical rebuke of the liberal, postmodern LGBT values and affirmation that Russia stay true to the traditionalist values. And these values are enumerated, are named in this law. So, and among them is, for example, the normal family that should consist from man and woman, veneration of religious tradition, continuity and recognition of identity of Russian people, importance of the social justice and domination of the spirit over matter. That I consider my personal gain. For example, if we have political law of such huge empire as Russia with nuclear weapon, affirming openly that the spirit should be considered over the matter, so we have gained finally that we have won. And that battle, it is clear and obvious that there are so many things ahead of us in order to bring in the consistency and coherence the political, social structures, educational structures, cultural structures, and cultural institutions with these new kind of political ideology based on traditionalism, of Eurasianism, on defense of Russian worlds and multipolarity. But finally, it is recognized as the main course and the main idea of present-day Russia. So we are now Eurasianists, we are party of real winners.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Dugin. That was a very succinct introduction, and I hope our listeners can appreciate all the details that you provided. I have a question about multipolarity. So, according to your vision, in which you also describe in your book, The Theory of Multipolarity, you envision a future world order in which you have different state civilizations, which are basically empires. So you would have a European empire, you would have a Eurasian pole, Islamic pole, Chinese pole, Indian pole. No, I would say North American and maybe South American. Now the question is, according to Darwinist principle and survival of the fittest, or even social Darwinism, like what guarantees the peacefulness of such a future multipolar order. So, for example, if you have Africa, and Africa doesn't have nuclear weapons or doesn't have enough nuclear weapons, and then you have China with a lot of nuclear weapons, what prevents China from colonizing Africa or exploiting Africa? Or what prevents the different poles from going to war with each other or trying to take each other's territory?
So first of all, I completely reject social Darwinism. I think that is Anglo-Saxon liberal Western racist attitude that doesn't correspond to the reality. I am against all kind of racism. For myself, the social Darwinism and the survival of the fittest, they that is a kind of slander on the humanity. I'm Christian. I think that we have totally different historical and social and human and cultural laws than social Darwinism. I consider that is a kind of satanic vision of the nature of human. I think the human is absolutely has nothing absolutely of the beast in its. So we could not apply anything from the animal worlds to human society, because human is not animal in nothing. So the human being is first of all, as Socrates said, the soul and the thinking soul. If we can think that this soul now in a difficult situation, that civilization was led by the Satanists in a way to lose its own soul, that is happening, but never man can be transformed into the animal, because we are not animals. We are much more angels, maybe fallen angels, but angels nevertheless. So nothing mechanical, nothing organical, nothing biological can be regarded as important element or constitutive element of our being.
Yeah, but don't you think that throughout human history, like the stronger nations have always tried to subjugate the weaker ones? I mean, it's happening today. It was happening in the Middle Ages. It was happening in the ancient world, I think. And don't you think it's simply a natural process? And my question really was, what can prevent one powerful actor on the global stage in a multipolar order? What can prevent such an actor from trying to subjugate a weaker pole? Do you think that all poles should be equipped with nuclear weapons?
I am going to explain, but first I would like to finish my explanation of the human being. So if some state or some political structure would like to dominate the other, maybe we see that in the reality. But there are the other example that we see peaceful cooperation and coexistence of different civilization and states between each other. So nothing social Darwinist I see in that, but it's the first thing. Secondly, about how we can regard multipolarity and how we can manage the possible conflicts. So in that sense, I am partisan of realist tradition in international relations. But classical realism in international relations, advocated, for example, by Morgenthau, by Edward Carr, and other, there is huge tradition of the realism, including new realism, as Meyer Schimmer, modern days American political analysts, and many others. So the realism is based on the presumption that the national state possesses absolute sovereignty. And that means that there is no instance, supranational instance, that could prevent this entity, national statehood, to go to the war or to keep peace. So peace and war are always possible because they are included in the concept of the sovereignty. on the level of the Westphalian system, on the level of international relations between the national states, the realists, they always affirm now that the war and peace is possible. What is changing with multipolarity? The main change is not peace or war, but who is the subject, who is the actor, main actor of international relations. In the multipolar world, the main actor of international relations is civilizational state, not normal state, not national state, civilization state. Civilizational state is created in the process of unification of the potentials, of the resources of classical national state in order to create a kind of super state, as Eurasia, as China, as India. Relations between these super states in the multipolarity will be based exactly on the same logic as relations between the national states in the context of the of traditional realism. But how in traditional realism, not in multipolar world, such a problem as, for example, asymmetry between stronger state and weaker state were decided. But the idea was solved by the principle of pluriversum. Pluriversum. So that is the concept of Carl Schmitt. For example, what does that mean? That, for example, we have two states, one stronger, the other weaker. But the weaker state can always apply to form a kind of coalition against the stronger one, or to appeal directly to strongest state. We see that in the Ukrainian conflict. For example, Russia is stronger than Ukraine. Ukraine is weaker than Russia. But Ukraine appeals to United States. They are a kind of NATO bloc that is stronger than Russia, and by this way tries to save itself. That is normal realist solution for the problem for weaker and stronger. But the concept, the main concept, is that nobody could prevent to start the war or to keep peace. That is included in the concept of the sovereignty in the nationals in the world with national state that we have today, or we had yesterday. That is the law, and the war is possible and the peace is possible. Peace and war are united because they are two solutions of the concrete realization of the sovereignty. In the multipolarity, we would have the same situation. But the difference is only in the actor. For example, we have strong China and weak Africa, African civilizational state. But there are the others as well. And if, for example, Africa feels herself insecure in the front of China or in the front of United States of America, Africa could make appeal to the other poles, for example, Eurasia or India, and that we could create the blocks of in the context of multipolar world that could prevent the war or could defend that who needs to be defended. The only problem is the change of the main subject of the international relations. And that is precisely what we are heading for. And I think that multipolar world will be neither more safer nor less safer than the worlds of national states. The peace and the war is always possible, and there is always the possibility to solve the problem without without using a weapon, as in the traditional Westphalian system.
Ah, thank you very much for this explanation. I think it cleared up a lot, because a lot of people actually were asking me this question. So I hope your explanation cleared it up for them. I have another question. Since Arctos publishes your books, but Arctos also publishes Guillaume Fay's books, I was just wondering if you have ever read any of Guillaume Fay's works.
To say the truth, I don't appreciate too much Guillaume Fay's books. I'm a member and follow. I am a friend and a follower of Alain de Benoist. The best in Guillaume Fay, in my opinion, was that was in, was inspired by Alain de Benoist and by Grasse. French dress in general. Original element of Fay's books, I find they don't convince me. I don't think they're brilliant. So they're kind of slogans, from time to time pertinent or not so much pertinent remarks in the cultures. So he was a kind of heretics of new right, and I follow much more the traditional classical orthodox new right version. So his idea of Eurasivery, in my opinion, that was the kind of the way to find alternative name for Eurasianism, and Eurasivery, that's a very, very stupid name in my opinion, because Siberia obviously is not European. It's not is not special continent. It's the part of Eurasian space, of Turan. And we can speak either Eurasian civilization is totally distinct, totally different from the European one, or there is some continuity between them, but the Siberia has nothing to do with all that. I appreciate the kind of allusion to Spengler that evaluated very, very high the future of Siberia, but all that concerns only Russians. So Europeans should construct their civilization relations to Russia, Eurasia as such, and Siberia cannot be the concept cannot play any part, any role in that. So in my opinion, but any publishing house, any journal, any group of intellectuals are totally free to publish what they want and to develop the ideas they think are relevant.
Thank you very much. I think this leads me to my next question, because like in the new right, in the contemporary new right, I think there are basically two camps. You have the I would say what they call themselves racialists, Western racialists, sort of like white nationalists, and then you have the also identitarians, and you have I would say more people who follow Alain de Benoist, since you mentioned him, the ethno-pluralists who basically reject racism. Yes, so their slogan is like 0% racism, but 100% identity. So I think these two camps sometimes clash. So The question is, if you have, say, the white nationalist camp or the racialist camp, how would you win them over to, say, Eurasianism or to your philosophy? Like, how would you convince them? Like, what is the benefit, say, for Europeans in embracing multipolarity rather than Western dominance?
So first of all, I am totally in the second line. Identity, culture is everything. Cultural identity is everything. And biological aspect has nothing to do with all that. More than that, I consider the kind of pretension of the West to rule the world as something horrible, as a kind of failure against the other and against Western civilization herself. So I think that is Anglo-Saxon capitalist tendency that has done the damages for Western civilization itself, and this racism came with colonialism and with the end of the traditional society in the Europe herself. So racism is modern, Anglo-Saxon, capitalist, and repellent, in my opinion. So I wouldn't make anything in order to convince racists, because I think that is a kind of repellent attitude. If we consider the difference between civilization, you could reduce this difference to some universal mode, as precisely racists of any kind, including liberal racists, do. And that is a kind of arrogance, that is colonialism, and that is absolutely unhuman. So I wouldn't convince the racists. I would just pass away kind of dialogue with them. But I think that Alain de Benoist, by the way, has suggested during all intellectual history of New Right the millions of arguments dealing with such people, and I would like to repeat themselves. I just reject any kind of racism. And the only way that I would say that in multipolar world, the Western civilization, as one civilization among the other, will be totally prevent from influence of the other. So if Europe for European, America for Americans, and do what they want inside of this territory, if you come to other civilization trying to impose your own values, you will be defeated, you will be destroyed, you will be attacked, and you will be killed if you don't stop trying to impose on other civilization your own rule. But inside of the traditional organic boundaries of the Western civilization, you are free to organize your society exactly as you wish. You can bring more immigrants, you could make LGBT rights, you could destroy your society with abortions and drugs. It is up to you. Or you can to construct a kind of empire, a kind of new society with new rules, with new ethics, with new traditions, with new principles. It's totally up to you to live or to die, to be sane and to return to the tradition that I would welcome, by the way, return to the tradition, to pre-modern version of organization of the society, to pre-modern classical Western values that we share. We Russians, we are heirs of the same classical tradition of Greece and Rome, but it is up to you totally. So I think that idea to try to say the declining and disappearing under our eyes the dominance of the West over the other civilizations, it is the kind of agony. You are losing your own our society. There is nothing white, there is nothing traditional, there is nothing identity in modern German or France or United States. You try to convince someone that the modern days Western culture is a kind of white rule. It's anti-white rule. That's something completely different. So I think that the only way to all the people who defend their real spiritual and cultural and historical identity is to come to the camp of New Right, because it is the best way to save your own civilization. And I have no voice in that, because I am Eurasianist, I am Russian, we have our own world, Russian world, we have our own church, our own culture, we are Christians, and we have we start to play the leading role in reorganization of the world on the multipolar basis. I think the West will be the last to join this multipolarity, but nevertheless, if the West finds the inner resources to do that, I think that will be absolute logically will be on the line of Alain de Benoist and not on this ridiculous and contradictory kind of racism and white nationalism that I think is nothing at all. It is a kind of caricature, and the most you can it is to help Ukrainians bastards to kill Russians under the guise of the LGBT pride, Biden, Scholz, and the other globalist puppets. That all the contradictions is seen here in the Ukrainian conflict, because those who are in favor of Alain de Benoist stay with Russia, those who are the majority of racists and so-called white nationalists, they are fight for Ukraine, so politically or cultural, that is all clear in my opinion, and I have no idea to enter in the dialogue with the people like that. That I have no consideration at all.
Okay, thank you. Generally, I'm in agreement with you, because I remember a good quote by Alain de Benoist from last year, when he said that the current conflict in Ukraine is a conflict between the logic of empire and versus the logic of the nation state. I think he wrote this in an article for Le Monde, the French New Right magazine. I think you're right when you say that white nationalism and the whole theory of racism is basically an Anglo-Saxon product. I think it was imported even into Nazi Germany from the United States. Like Madison Grant, Lothrop Stoddard, all these people were very popular with Adolf Hitler and very other high officials in the Nazi government. So it is sort of the counterpoint would be, I would say, Franz Boas and Franz Boas's theory of cultural relativism, which I think is quite relevant to the theory of multipolarity, because Franz Boas describes he was an anthropologist who basically said that we shouldn't judge other cultures through the lens of our own culture. Do you think that Franz Boas's theory or notion of cultural relativism is applicable to multipolarity?
Absolutely. I consider myself to be a follower of Franz Boas, but I would hesitate to call it relativism. It is nothing like relativism. We don't speak that the truth is doesn't exist, that truth is something particular for everybody. So we need to understand better the concept of Franz Boas and his anthropological school that I admire. I affirm only that you could not pass from individual thing, directly to the common. So between the real common, the real universal and individual, there is such instance as culture. So when we are, for example, Eskimos, we have some elements, some things, and we understand the things, the world around us, the things we do, the people, the society we live in, through the lens of the Eskimo tradition. So Eskimo tradition is our Eskimo universalism. But that doesn't mean that, for example, there is no such thing as real universality. But the way to this universality should include and not exclude the consulting of all human societies with their own worlds. So the humanity is the world of the worlds, and we could not avoid, for example, Khoisan's traditions, African traditions, or small tribes in the Oceania. We need to consult everybody. We need to ask any human society, all human society, and try to understand them and to live with them and to penetrate the structure of their vision, what they think about human, what they think about death, what they think about life, what they think about sky and earth. And we need to kind of to take in account all these worlds in order to say for the first time something is universally true. But what we do, we take liberal, modern, Western, LGBT system and say that is universal truth. Everybody in the world should be gay tolerant, should be transgender accepting, should be woke. And that is must. That is a kind of universal law. So, and everybody who say, no, stop, we Russians, we have different, for example, understanding of how to come to something common, universal from individual. So they say, you are nationalist, you are racist, and so on. So that is very important things. Franz Boas and his tradition, and tradition of European, French sociology and anthropology of Marcel Mauss, of Levi-Strauss, and the other, S. Franz Boas, and many other the deep thinker of the 20th century, they said, we don't deny the existence of the universal, but we should not replace universal by ours. For example, modern Western American wokeist people, they say, oh, we know what the man is. It is individual trying to liberate itself from any kind of collective identity. But this knowledge, so-called universal, it is just pure relative and very, very, very limited projection and imperialistic colonial projection of the values or a historical experience or social structure of one society over the other without consulting them. So there is not exactly relativism. It is a kind of very correct and scientific, I would say, and human, or profoundly human way to understand what the real universalism can be and should be. It could not be constructed on the absolutization of the experience of only one society. It should take in consideration into the account the other societies. And in order to do that, we need to study them, to feel them, to love them, to explore them, to accept them. And only by that acceptance and multilateral dialogue, we can arrive to the real universality, not before. Because we Russians don't want to replace American wokeist liberal globalist universalism by our universalism. We have our vision of what is universal, but we agree that is universal for us, and we don't deny the possibility to go further and to find finally maybe in the future, with many more efforts to find something universal. But now we have nothing universal. We have racist liberalism that tries to impose on everybody its own values, calling them so-called universal. They are not universal in nothing. They reflect only Western, Anglo-Saxon, capitalist, liberal, postmodern, wokeist society and nothing more. And it is just pure provincial understanding of human, of history, and very, from time to time, deplorable and ridiculous, because they try to affirm all the humanity that body positive lesbian girl is the kind of the historical goal of creation and the kind of top of the cultural process, and that is ridiculous. And I think that without knowledge of the real basis of Western civilization, now the Western civilization has no right to call Western. The West is the motherland of Plato and Aristotle and Middle Age and the great Christian culture, and not this caricature that they try to sell as something universal to everybody. So I think that I agree that Franz Boas and anthropology should play an important role in the multipolar world. You are absolutely right. But I would like to say that we should be careful using the terms relativists or universalists. For example, we need to come to the stage of the kind of relative universalisms. That could sound paradoxically relative universalism, Western universalism, Russian universalism, Islamic universalism, Chinese universalism, and after that to try to start the real international intercivilizational dialogue about the meaning and the sense and the nature of all the terms we are using.
Yeah, valid point. Thank you very much for this explanation. I think this also sort of leads me to the topic of religion, since you mentioned earlier that you consider yourself a Christian. I would like to ask you regarding universalism about the perennial tradition or perennial wisdom. Because I would say if you talk about Christians, I would say that different types of Christians. You have like fundamentalist Christians who I've met in my life, who believe that Christianity is the correct religion, but all other religions are wrong. Only their version of Christianity is correct. Like for example, you could have a very strict Catholic person, and he said, "Okay, I'm Catholic, I'm Christian. All other religions are wrong. Hinduism is wrong, Islam is wrong, and even Protestantism is wrong. Orthodoxy is wrong. Only Catholicism is correct." I would say then you have other Christians who are with, maybe who are more tolerant or in their views, or who believe that Christianity in general is correct, and the different denominations are just different aspects of the general Christian truth, but other religions are still wrong. But then you have the, I would say, like, if you believe in the perennial tradition, you would say that you have the core of all religions is correct, like in Islam, Hinduism, or Christianity, and that just different expressions of the one eternal truth. So my question is, since you were talking about finding true universality or the true human universalism, do you believe that there's some kind of core spiritual truth, and that all the religions are different expressions, or do you believe that certain religions are the correct expressions and others are not?
So that is an interesting question. You never know. You never know, and you can't know. You can arrive at the positive conclusion about this open question without coming all the path through your own tradition. So we have no other way to access the core of the old traditions but to come through our own. So all the efforts to define, to defend the existence of only one primordial religion or primordial tradition, they are useless, because you cannot get access to this core without avoiding one of these traditions. And if you accept one of the sacred tradition, you should accept as well what it affirms, what it claims. You could not say, "Oh, I'm just the passenger here." So you should be totally engaged in your tradition to share everything this tradition affirms, in order to be legitimate part of it. So if, for example, and in that sense, let us to keep this horizon open. For example, let's come to the core and the center of our own tradition. Let's to be good Catholic, but good Catholic, not wokist Catholic, not same-sex marriage Catholic, not modernist or progressive Catholic. It is not Catholicism. So the real Catholicism, that is return to the pre-modern version of the tradition. So this much more difficult problem with Protestantism, that was born as something modern. So that was the modernity inside of the Christianity, but inside of Protestant traditions, there were some spiritual revolution, as Böhme, Gichtel, maybe Swedenborg. They are considered to be heresies, but they were interesting spiritual heresies inside of the Protestantism. But for example, so if you are part of tradition, of the sacred tradition, nevertheless, you should share everything this tradition affirms. You could not put yourself above the church, above the sacred tradition. We are just humans. We could not pretend to be more than sacred tradition. And following our own path inside of our sacred tradition, maybe we will see at the end, maybe we will see, is there such thing as transcendental unity of the religions or not? I think that transcendental unity of religion is something apophatic, that's something unnameable, something not as positive as tradition is, because the real center of the tradition is God. And when we approach God, we change. We are not the same as from in the beginning. So when we approach the highest point of our own tradition, we are already in the proximity of the God, and everything changes. And many questions we ask here, being on the periphery of the gods, they have no meaning there. So, but nevertheless, I think that my solution of traditionalism is follow the tradition, sacred tradition we choose, or we are by history put in, and try to not to blame the other, not to, because is there some truths outside of our religion or not? Nobody knows, only God knows. So if we know God, then we know this secondary issue. But if we know God, there is no difference, there is no such problem as the other people access to the real spirituality or not. It doesn't concern us. We should be concerned by to be real good Christians, Orthodox Christian, or a Catholic, real Catholic, not pseudo-Catholic as today, or real spiritually believers in Protestant tradition, or in Islam, or in Hinduism, or in Confucianism, so, or in Black Africa or Latin America. So I could not blame, and I could not, the other traditions, I am Christian Orthodox, but I could not dare to call them, for example, wrong or right. I have no idea. So it is up to them to decide. The only way, so I respect the differences of the religions, of the civilizations, and as well, I respect them because the God has created them, because the God has given them the right to exist, and he has led to these civilizations to exist, and I accept them as the creature of the God, and I venerate it them, and I am always open to explain what is my belief, and I, with great interest, I could hear what is the belief of other. It's very, very important and enriching, but that doesn't necessarily mean the war.
Yes, I would agree with your statements, and this leads me to my next point. I read recently that in a text on geopolitica.ru that the immortality of the soul is the foundation of the fourth political theory. Would you care to elaborate on this idea?
So that is maybe main point, because the modern Western society denies the existence of soul, the soul, human soul. They speak of psyche, of neurology, and try to explain the existence of the human person, human rationality, human feelings, by the external reality, so by the body, by some impulses, and so on. Basing on this materialism, anthropological materialism, we cannot found a proper political theory. That will be a kind of mechanical construction. And first political theory has ambition to be the really human political theory, and we could not advocate humanity outside of the human soul. The human soul, immortal human soul, is the human, is the society, is the historical, is the political. So if we deny it, We have nothing to do to we, it's just mechanisms, the robots or the animals. So we have no political dimension, because Aristotle has said that the man is political animal, not so much animal but living being, political living being. Zoon in Greek is a living being. So the man is political living being, and the man, in another definition of Aristotle, is a living being having the logos, having the intellect. So the politics, intellect, all that is about dignity of the human soul. So the human soul is not something addicted, added to the to the society. It is the center of society. So we need the politics of soul. We need the state, as Hegel said. Hegel said that the state is the state of spirits, and the psychology is the science of spirit. So the spirits, human spirits, human souls, are the same as the real citizen of the spiritual polis. And we need to save the minimal understanding of the politics that is imposed by liberals. We need to save that and affirm the dignity of the great politics and great political style, and the greatness is given only by human soul, and by and the state should be a sacred empire, and the state should be the state of the souls and empire of the spirits, and as in the Platonian version, or is as in Byzance, the Orthodox Christians understood the Christian Empire, so as a spiritual institution. So fourth political theory is a kind claims to return to that sacred politics, and the sacredness of the politics is rooted in the concept of the immortal soul. That is the basis as well of our church. And that was proper to Protestants, for Catholics, for Orthodox, before the Western types of Christianity have lost this concept and has accept satanic and this satanic vision of human without the soul. Human without the soul, human being without the soul, is not human anymore. Nothing could prove that we are dealing with human being. Only the soul makes from the human the real human.
Well, I completely agree with you, and this leads me to my next question. Since you said that basically the soul is central to human civilization and the focus should be on the soul, basically I think what you're advocating sort of is a return to the Middle Ages, because the focus of the Middle Ages was the immortality of the soul. I mean, all the energy, all art was basically focused on this idea, and trying to save the soul, and trying to make sure that the soul goes to the right place and stays in the right place. So how would you reconcile such a society? Basically, a new Middle Ages, let's say you have a new Middle Ages, but at the same time, you have the modern technology, you have electricity, you have the internet, you have computers, you have now artificial intelligence, or soon you will probably have real artificial intelligence. Now you have programs like ChatGPT and so on. And I think these programs and this development is not going to go away. I think it will stay. And I think Putin recently, I think last week, also gave a speech about the potential of AI, and that Russia should try to keep up with the development of AI, because it is going to become essential for the well-being of any society. Yes, because if I suppose if a society does not keep up with the development of AI, it's going to be left behind because other societies will overtake the society in terms of wealth and therefore well-being also for the citizens. So do you think there's a way to reconcile this technology with spirituality?
It is not easy because technology is not just instrument. That is something much, much more deeper. And Heidegger has seen correctly that technology is the destiny. Technology is metaphysic. Technology is nihilism. Technology is the tool of the humanity to kill itself. So finally, that is the tool of desacralization, the deontologization, if you want. So the form of active loss of the relations to being or to God. So I don't think that technology is neutral and we can really conquer it or submit it or to win it. I think that today a few people understand how toxic technology is. Technology is something that erodes the society, and the idea of the technology is the creation of artificial men. Artificial intelligence is just this other name for the replacement of the natural man created by God by artificial man created by godless man. But here that's very important. Recently, one of the monk of the very, very authoritative monk in Russia, one metropolit in charge of all monasteries of Russia, has said in the private discussion with myself and with other serious people from the government, he has said, now we are working on the artificial intelligence, on ChatGPT, but you don't understand who is on the other side. You think you are dealing with your own images, with your own creations. You are wrong. There is something outside. There is outer intelligence in the world. There are fallen angels, and the reality is full of them. And these fallen angels are responsible precisely for replacing the human created by God by artificial human being. You don't believe that because you don't believe God, and you don't believe God because you are under influence of these fallen angels during all the Western modernity. And now it could be laughable to any discourse claiming to stop it, but you consider this technological development as something inevitable, as and that concerns Putin. Putin was raised in the normal Soviet communist atheist materialist family. Why he should be exception? And that our society, Russian society, Western society, we are a godless society without any really meaning of what the God is, the church is, the soul is. So I consider the technological progress as a kind of pole of the humanity and the rise of the counter-humanity. And the more responsible partisans of the artificial intelligence, of post-humanism, they are consciousness that they are working in favor of some post-human future. And to be the other thing, we could not just prohibit it. Maybe it would be a good solution. Maybe it would be a good solution to prohibit some lines of scientific and technological researchers, stop them, just stop, to cut financial support and put in prison those who don't want to do that. But as Putin has said correctly, always there will be some people who against everything find a way to continue their researches, and so maybe we should continue as well these technological researches as well. But as for example Middle Ages monks studying demonology, because there were many experts in the life of demon and the nowhere of the Satan inside of the monasteries in the Middle Age. They studied them, they observed them, they in order to fight them. And we need to know technology in order to fight technology, I would say. So that will be a special department from Secret Service agents. They could have permission to deal with something like special artificial intelligence and so on. But that is as the same as to get down to the subhuman, subterrestrial worlds in order to study the technology of the Satan. So maybe it makes sense. In my opinion, it doesn't make too much sense, but better to stop all that and to prevent, to prohibit. And if someone doesn't want to obey, to deal with him accordingly, but maybe it is not so easy, and Satan is very, very tricky, and he would like to find other way to overcome humanity. But nevertheless, we should be realistic. We are dealing with artificial human beings, so we can say it is just autonomous human initiative. I don't think so. I don't believe it is sovereign, autonomous, and free. I think it is imposed on us, and that is why we consider this as some destiny and some as something like mechanical fate, for example. So we could not stop. Why we could not stop? We are free human beings. We could stop anything. We could start anything. We could fall. We could rise. We could begin. We could stop anything. So I, in my opinion, we'd better stop here with artificial intelligence and with creation of post-human artificial being, rather than to get into the matrix, into this science fiction topics that we are already we have already seen what that should lead normally to a nuclear war, to the extermination of human race, and so on and so on. And that is logical. So the science fiction describes some continuation of the trend that exists now, and we in order to prove how right and justful science fiction is, we should not wait and mistrust it. Let us trust science fiction, and let us stop to get in this direction.
Yeah, but the problem is, I think, that if you want to stop the development of artificial intelligence, you could only do it, like in Europol or in your state civilization, say in Eurasia, for example, you could stop it, but then other poles might not stop it, like the United States or North America, the North American pole or the Chinese pole, that might continue developing it. And if one pole stops it, say if the Eurasian pole stops developing this technology, but the other poles don't, then I think the other poles will become more powerful and will therefore be able to dominate the weaker pole again. And then we're back to what we discussed earlier. So, because you need to be on sort of like similar levels, no? Or wouldn't you agree?
So that is how the Saturn reasons. So by one trick or by the other, you are invited to go that way. So if we return to the recognition of existence of some fallen intelligence, I would say, so the things would be more clearer for all poles. But I have no solution here. So we can, I have no final solution, but if we continue, what is sure that we will be replaced. Human race is now on the edge to be destroyed and replaced by post-human if we let it develop free. So we need to imagine something, or otherwise we will be there will be the end of the humanity. Maybe it's time, I don't know. Maybe the God has opened the doors of the abyss in order to punish us finally, but artificial intelligence is certainly a satanic thing. But now we need to stop, I think, because I have some
okay, no problem.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. It was very, very fruitful, and I hope our listeners will learn
from it.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.